Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English then.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of the second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Ooh.
We did it
in harmony. Ooh, two-part harmony. And if you'd like to give us a call, and today is July 13th where you are, the Saturday, July 13th, not Friday, July 13th, then, which means it's 2019, then you can give us a call at 254-773-1400. And, of course, now if you're outside the United States, you got to put a 1 in front of that.
Yeah. And in some cases, you have to put a plus 1, but the plus is hard to find.
I think the plus is metaphorical.
Yeah. We were on the break, and just to prove how geeky we were talking about the producer price index. While we didn't have to be talking about it, just what we talk about.
What is more fascinating than producer price indices?
The producer prices in June increased, hold on to your seats, 0.1%.
Or 1.2% on an annualized basis.
Right. Producer prices are up 1.7% versus a year ago. Okay, so that's roughly where the Fed kind of wants it to stay. The problem is that we've got services as a side of this, and that's going up a bit faster. And this is something we've been talking about on the air for a while. Let's see, where is that? 2.3%? Yep, producer prices excluding food and energy rose 2.3% over the past year. That's above the 2% target. And prices for services were up 2.5%. So what we've been talking about on the inflation on services side.
Right. You can't have somebody in China come fix your plumbing.
Right. And even when you're talking about services on a software level, those prices are going up too. The price is going up on on-site services, going up a lot faster than 2.5%. But we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Just off the subject a little bit, but does anyone know how much illegal immigration has cost us and will likely cost us in the future? And is this a significant part of our deficit spending? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. This is going to be
a complicated
answer, because the net result, this is, if you heard us last hour, we were talking about how you measure economic impacts. If you're measuring statistically, the economic impact of 9/11 was minuscule. The death impact of 9/11 was minuscule, because if you look at 3,000 people as a percentage of 300 million, well, that's no big deal. Emotional impact is a different thing. So the financial impact of illegal immigration, there have been quite a few studies on this. The most recent ones are not very recent. And they're measuring a different form of illegal immigration than what we're seeing today. So we're seeing refugee seekers today, and these studies were measuring more traditional illegal immigration, if you can call it a traditional pastime, of coming and working and then sending money back home. Every single study that I've been able to find on that had a net positive to the economy. The net negative is not in the economics. The net negative is in governmental expenses, which come from taxes. It's not part of government economic growth, and in but the taxes paid into the system more than paid for that Social Security that wasn't going to be collected because they don't live here and it's not even their
aspects.
Number.
Go ahead. I've actually read some analysis on this to give you some idea.
Yeah.
Congress just passed and the president signed a bill allocating $4.6 billion, which sounds like a lot of money, to handle the immigration, the refugee immigration coming across the border.
The crisis on the border. It's
right.
A big problem.
And so $4.6 billion sounds like a lot of money. But the U.S. government spending is $3.8 trillion this year. $3.8 trillion. Now, that's like you had $3,800 and you spent $4.60.
Yeah.
It is so insignificant.
It's a lot of money.
But here's the backside to this. The majority of illegal immigrants don't come across the border.
Right. They overstay their visas.
And they work. And they generally, this is really fascinating, they work under false Social Security numbers.
Right.
They pay into Social Security. They pay income taxes, which, by the way, they don't get refunds on.
Because they can't file. If they do, it's fraud, and you can find them.
And so the bottom line to it is, if you look at what illegal immigration costs the United States, it's a negative number. They actually contribute to the financial well-being of the government because they pay in more than they cost or take out.
Right. And when you think of it from a common sense perspective, so long as they're not coming in and completely leeching off the system somehow, which is really hard to do. Illegal immigrants have to show proof of a lot of things to receive benefits. It's not true when it comes to showing up at a hospital. It's not true when it comes to enrolling in a public school. But in a lot of other areas, it's true. And on the public school side, there's a completely different set of studies on this. The property tax increase coming from illegal immigration pays for the immigrant children. So all of that says, hey, it sounds like the McClures think illegal immigration is okay. That's not what we're saying.
We know. We just – it's a matter of backing up and looking at illegal immigration versus what's in the news. What's in the news is that there's thousands of refugee migrants coming across the border. But that is just a tiny slice of illegal immigration.
Right.
Illegal immigration, and we've said this before, the vast majority, like 80-some percent of illegal immigrants in the United States came through airports. And the vast majority of those, like 97, 98% of them, are gainfully employed. And if you don't believe it,
I mean, the statistics are all there.
Go to the East Coast and see who's working in the leisure industry in the hotels. The Trump Mar-a-Lago was employing hundreds of illegal undocumented workers, they called them.
And they've swept them out, but new ones are in there now. And this is true across the entire hospitality industry. If you're in restaurants, if you're in hotels, if you're in resorts, there's a lot of illegal immigrant workers. And they had visas at some point when they signed up. So the employers did their job, checked it off, okay, all good. But didn't come back
to
look for renewals on the visas. So illegal immigration is extremely, extremely nuanced. It's not something that we can say this is the impact on the economy, because there's an emotional impact as well.
The fact is, we have an immigration law, our set of immigration laws.
Man, are they broken?
That are so contradictory and so screwed up and so mired in politics that we can't seem to fix them. We could create, and matter of fact, the Senate a couple of years back during, was it George W. Bush administration? No, during the Obama administration, I think it was, the Senate actually passed a bill with a complete immigration reform that made it into such a simple, straightforward thing. Basically, it said we can have enough people coming into the United States to fill the jobs, and we'll give them worker permits after doing background checks in their native country, and then they have to leave after so many years. And the funding was in there to track the people who overstayed their permits. I mean, it was a beautiful, as the president would say, it was a beautiful, magnificent, greatest bill that was ever passed in the history of the world, or something like that. And the conservative caucus in the House of Representatives killed it.
That kind of show you where it's broken. Okay, what is illegal immigration? That's the first question. Number one, what level of violation is it, and what is it? Well, anytime you cross the border and you don't have a visa, you didn't get a stamp on your passport, you didn't get some...
Unless there's a treaty that says you can do that.
Right, unless there's a treaty that says it's all right to do it.
And we've got one with Mexico.
So we can go back and forth in Mexico. We don't have to have our passport.
And they can come over here without having a passport.
Right. But they're not supposed to stay.
They have to have a passport. They just don't have to have a visa.
Right. So, and they're not supposed to stay very long. Okay. So if they just are here, that's not illegal immigration. If they're here intending to stay, that's illegal immigration. Okay, that seems pretty cut and dry. There's some nuances there, but that's pretty simple. Unless they're here requesting refugee status. They're requesting asylum because of some great danger in where they are from. Then they are no longer illegal. because we have a different law that deals with that. So we're labeling illegal immigration across this whole spectrum. The laws are unclear when refugee status starts and when illegal status stops. What is it illegal if you came across the border without getting stamped and you request asylum? Technically, the courts have said no. So,
well, the law doesn't require a refugee who's seeking asylum to come through a border checkpoint.
That's correct. And so this is the point. We have laws, just like we were talking about last hour with the Secure Act and many of the other laws, the 401k laws. Laws that are doing things that they're not intended to do, and no simplification. And the reality is that Congress will not attempt to simplify complex areas because it lowers their power. They have less power when they simplify the system. They can't just focus on one group and say, you're good, you're bad anymore, unless they add more complication back into the system.
Our refugee laws in the United States were set up, focused on two areas. One, people who were fleeing communist, mainly people who were fleeing communist countries.
Right.
If they could get to the United States by hook or by crook.
I mean, just look what's still going on with Cuba.
Then they could say, we're here as refugees and we, if
political
we go back,
refugees.
If,
yeah.
if we go back, we're going to go to prison.
Or and maybe so, get killed.
And so we passed laws that said if you get into the United States, and particularly we were looking at Cuba, if you basically get into Cuba, if you set foot on American soil out of Cuba,
we want you to come over here.
You have the right to stay.
And the reason for that, let me throw that in there. Cuba, at the time this law was passed, had an exceedingly educated population, college-educated people, doctors, lawyers, architects, and they were trying to get to the United States in mass because all of their property had been seized by the Cuban government. So they're trying to get here. We pass a law based on that moment saying we want as many refugees from Cuba as we possibly can. Now, that's changed since then, but the law is still there. So the Coast Guard is busy trying to gather up boats from Cuba and send them back before they come
right
to the soil of the United States, because as soon as they hit the soil, they become capable of a citizen track and their refugee status.
So, until we change that law, we have a law that says if you believe you're politically persecuted and you make it across the Rio Grande and set foot on American soil, you are legally here, and you're obligated to turn yourself in, which, by the way, the refugees are doing in mass,
yeah,
turning themselves in.
I mean, that's why we're getting this record number of detainees, is because they're saying, hey, I'm here. Hello.
And what the raids that are scheduled to come in the near future are aimed at people who didn't show up for their court date to defend their political status. And in many cases, I hate to say this, but in many cases, they had no clue what their court date was.
Right. Or where.
We just don't have a system that's designed to deal with it.
Yeah, many people, and this is we've got a broken system. Our courts are overloaded. The citations given to people that have been found and released to appear in court often don't have a date or a location to show up in. These are people that don't speak English very well, at all.
And they don't know what their address is going to be. And even if it's in Spanish, the point is informing them. And by the way, any time that there's been appeals on this, when they can get an attorney, it gets thrown out almost even though they didn't show up for a court date. The reason it gets thrown out is they were never served to what's called a process. They were never told, hey, here's the court, you need to show up, here's the location, and here's the date. They never were officially informed of that.
So what we're trying to say here is that we as a people haven't defined what we want here. What we have as a definition is one of the most convoluted spaghetti tangle of messy what's going on here. Of course we're upset about this. Everybody should be upset about this. We need to come together as a people and say, what do we need? What do we want
and
here?
I want to support the president. He says, Congress, get your act together.
Fix it.
Give us a immigration reform bill. and neither the Senate nor the House has been able to come up with one.
Right, and they've had lots of opportunities, so I think they should be doing that. Now, we've got a caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say I think the problem is our politicians keep passing feel-good legislation that appeals to our emotion. Such as, well, we're trying to help the kiddos or the children or stop that, the
That's what we elect them for.
But we keep on re-electing them.
See, they're not trying to solve a problem. They're trying to get more votes.
Then why do we keep re-electing them?
Because we don't want to solve a problem either. We just want them to make us feel good.
Yeah, and that is the problem. We have got to start passing common sense legislation that is not based on emotional feel good.
You're completely correct.
Yeah, there's a problem there, Con, and there's a problem in the logic. And that is that common sense isn't very common.
No, it's not. It's almost absent.
I'll give you an example, Con. You probably have voted for John Carter consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've probably supported John Carter. John Carter was one of the people who killed the Immigration Reform Act that was bipartisan, almost unanimously passed out of the Senate. And he was a secretary of the Conservative Caucus that killed it, would have addressed the refugee asylum issue that we're seeing today and would have set up a system to deal with it. And we keep reelecting him because he's our guy.
He is our guy. He's done a lot of good things for our district, and that is the conundrum. We have a good guy in office who is doing things that are politically expedient. That's what politicians do. You won't hear us trash talking John Carter because he's doing what the district has elected him to do.
He voted for the Secure Act that cuts down to 10 year the amount of time your descendants get your heirs or your beneficiaries get to roll out their IRA,
which could cause a huge tax increase.
And it's a huge tax increase. At the same time, though, I'm sure if you ask him, he would say, "But look, it was helping." And matter of fact, he bragged about that on his website. It's helping those children of fallen veterans not to pay 37% income tax
on
their income.
That's the issue with politics, is that this particular law has good things in it and bad things in it. And each law has good things in it and bad things in it because – and this is the tough part, is that depending on where you stand, the good things might be somebody else's bad things and the bad things might be somebody else's good things.
But we don't pay attention to what our position – in other words, having a Immigration Reform Act that addresses all of these issues we're having and sets up work permits and so on, which we had one that came out of the Senate, we, the people of the United States, chose to elect a group of people into the House of Representatives who said, we don't want to change the law, we want to leave it like it is.
Right.
And so it's our responsibility. I wouldn't blame the politicians. We don't study what they do.
Yeah.
We don't pay attention to what they do versus what they said. We just elect them, and as long as they bring home the bacon to the district on a regular basis, we're just happy as we can be.
Yeah.
And we the people of the United States, and I didn't say you. Notice that very carefully. I said we.
All of us.
We are responsible to figure out what our representatives are doing and whether it makes sense and not just listen to the propaganda.
And then if you feel like there's some nuances that need to be discussed, talk to your representative. Say, hey, what's going on here? Why is it? What is it we're trying to accomplish here? And that's kind of the big thing, is that we're not starting with an end goal on many of the things that we're dealing with the tax cut. The end goal was to cut taxes, and we did that. They go back up, automatically go back up in 2025. So what did we accomplish? Well, we accomplished tax savings for a lot of citizens for a while and greater debt for the government, good things and bad things. Oh, politics.
Another problem is we're not going to solve these problems until we get our mind off of the last football score or basketball
you
score.
You got it.
I think
get our mind on what's happening to the future of America.
Well, the Kardashians, I mean, they're important. We got to watch what happens if we're going to. They're a lot more interesting to watch than C-SPAN.
But I keep asking the question, how does the score in that ball game affect the rest of your life that you live in this country, as opposed to the act they just passed in Congress? That will affect your life for the rest of your life in this country.
Well, Con, you know, you and we are in a very small minority that even has the foggiest notion of what's going on in Congress.
That's true.
And therein is the danger.
And what's going to happen when y'all and me and Rush and the rest of them, what happens if we go away?
Well, I can say that my descendants, my children, are by and large pretty darn aware of what's going on in Congress. And I presume that you're passing it on to some people, too.
Oh, you bet. You bet. So what obligation do we take seriously? I mean, the McClures and Kahn and the rest of them that are trying to do something, what obligation do we take seriously? We take the obligation that we are enjoying freedom, and we have an obligation and a responsibility to try to preserve that freedom for our future generations.
You got it. And that's why we get on the air and spend a couple of hours. I think you spend 2 hours, too, don't you?
Yes, I do.
So for 4 hours, anybody that's willing to listen hears. And if you're not willing to listen, well, that's the issue of democracy. We always get the government we deserve.
Yes, we do.
And it's some of us are rabble-rousers and trying to stir up things and trying to convince people that there's probably it's a little more complicated than they think it is and that they ought to think twice about the entire thing. I mean, like, for instance, the Secure Act has some big positives in it and some big negatives in it on how you personally feel about it. But
it's
our
really,
senator,
really hard to have an opinion one way or another about it because there's things in it that are so amazing and things in it that are like really bad.
But the point is, our senator Ted Cruz, that we just got through reelecting in the state of Texas, is the one who killed it. And 97, and what? There were only 3 votes in the House of Representatives
against it. Yeah, and it would have been a unanimous vote in the Senate if he hadn't said no. So I mean, that's politics.
Yeah, we just reelected him, but what was the alternative?
I don't know.
Yeah, that was Beto O'Rourke.
I actually read Beto O'Rourke's position on almost everything, and frankly, I didn't think he had a bad, considering what politicians say in election versus what they do when they get there. I don't think he had a bad deal at all, which is why he got so many votes. A lot of nominal Republicans, a lot of people who are moderate Republicans, voted for Beto O'Rourke, because if you actually read his positions on a lot of things, you thought, that makes sense.
Pro-gun.
Among other things, he was very much in favor of a comprehensive immigration reform act, and he went down basically the list I just gave you a moment ago of work permits to fill jobs that we can't fill otherwise. You know, we in the United States, we have, I think right now, 2-point-something job openings in the United States for every person who conceivably could be looking for work. But we won't allow people to come into the United States to fill those jobs. That's neither a Democrat nor a Republican issue. It's just something that we need immigration reform to fix.
I think immigration reform shouldn't be about the Democrats or the Republicans. I think we're losing ourselves in that team fight rather than just saying, what is it that we want to accomplish? So let me put out an idea there. If we had a system where employers can show that they've been trying to hire in a given area for a given period of time and they're having difficulty. It's for an unskilled position or a skilled position. And they enter, we need this many people and we can't find them here. And this is the pay we're offering. It's a good wage. There should be some categories there. And then the government says, all right, this is how many job openings we have for immigration based on jobs that are actually available. Links the company with the person coming in. The company is then responsible for the transportation into and out of the company. or the country. Once the visa expires, the company is the one that's required to communicate with the government and say, we want to keep this person on, or to pay for the transportation back to their home country.
I mean,
that seems reasonable to me.
I got a personal one that I think would work really well. Basically, and it sounds, and it's going to be objectionable to some people, and that is basically if you clear all your background checks and everything and you come in, you get a work visa in the United States, and you work for a certain, let's say, 15 years. You're gainfully employed for 15 years. You pay your taxes. You keep your nose out of trouble. You basically live.
And the rest of you, not just your nose.
You just keep yourself out of trouble, and you gainfully employed, and you learn English. And then you fast track to be a citizen.
And you earned your citizenship.
Yes. And we'd fill the jobs up, and we would give a 15-year or 10-year, 10 years I think is enough, 10-year trial period to see is this a responsible member of society.
But this requires the Republicans and the Democrats both saying, hey, this is what we're trying to accomplish. Right now the Republicans are saying there's illegal immigration, and the Democrats are saying the laws are silly and you're doing bad things to illegal immigrants. Instead of saying – what do we agree on? And there's some things we do agree on. let's find those and fix the parts that we can.
You just raised an excellent point. What do you value most? Something that you earned or something that was given to you free?
And people come to the United States and they earn the right to citizenship by working here for a certain number of years, they should be fast-tracked into citizenship. Now, the problem with that immediately is how about the people who've already been here 10 years and have been gainfully employed? Do they get a fast track to citizenship?
This is, you know, directly, Con, you just said that. There was a study on that subject. Duke University did the study, and it wasn't earning citizenship. It was a group of people buying or winning season tickets to the football games. The people that were given the season tickets had a 40% attendance rate. The people that bought the season tickets had a 90% attendance rate. Well, what does that mean?
Yeah. You got it. You know what's scary, Con? We're agreeing.
Well, I'm gonna have to excuse myself. I've got an obligation here in a few minutes.
Why don't you come on for a couple hours on the radio today and talk about your stuff?
Let's schedule in at noon.
Noon. How's why don't sound? You come on at noon and go to 2 o'clock, okay?
And we'll do this next
every
few
week.
Weeks.
Let's just do it every week.
Yeah. How's that?
Well, let me say that I appreciate y'all's time that you give to trying to preserve some freedom in this country. I appreciate y'all doing that because you're standing up or what you believe in, and that we need more people just like you.
We need more people like you too, Con. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a great day. All right. So we got to play some commercials. We're going to play some commercials. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to join the conversation, we have a phone number that actually works.
254-773-1400.
And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400. If today is July 13th, 2019, where you are.
Yes.
Well, maybe. It could be July 14th if you're on the other side of the international dateline.
Yes.
And you're listening on the internet. But at any rate, whatever. Let's see. One of the, you know, there's a potential crisis rolling down the road, and
another one.
I mean,
oh my goodness,
we talked about it a little earlier.
Oh,
Congress is
one.
So at loggerheads with itself and can't seem to get anything done. They're going to adjourn in early August, and
not come back till mid-September.
And probably by the time they get back, the government will be out of money unless they raise the debt ceiling and pass a spending bill.
Can you see any problem with that taking place
in
this kind of environment?
Phenomenal problems with it taking place in this environment. And the question is whether they're actually going to pull their act together long enough to do it.
I, I wouldn't give odds in any way. I would say the Treasury Secretary has been on the phone with Speaker Pelosi five times in the last 3 days.
Well, she says she's going to fast track it and do the best she can, but she can't make any guarantees.
Right. It's a contentious area, and anytime we're dealing with a McConnell Pelosi agreement to get anything done, I think there may be
there's a left wing revolt going on in the House of Representatives.
Right.
It reminds me tremendously of the old conservative caucus. Basically, we'll sink the ship if necessary to
right.
get our way.
Well, that's what happens when somebody gets a majority. It's not the minority that they fight anymore. It's members of their own majority. And that's true no matter if it's Democrat or Republican.
Speaking of Democrats, Republicans, and truth, there is a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Frank.
Hi, Frank.
You're talking about illegal immigration there, and I think the real harm in illegal immigration is our culture. Every time we go to vote, we see aquí, you know, vote in Spanish.
Now you got it. Now, hang on just a second. You remember that was passed voluntarily by probably the most conservative state in the Union, Texas. Most Republican-dominated state in the Union, Texas, passed the law that said all those have to be in Spanish as well as English.
And that was back when the Republicans were courting the Hispanic voters. So now it's flipped. The Democrats are courting it now. And they don't want the language to change.
Well, I do realize that, but I think that's wrong.
You're right. And have you contacted your congressman, your state representative, and your state senator about it?
I am active, yes.
Good. Well, it's really important to contact them because, you know, the state of Texas could change that law.
Yeah, the state of Texas could pass a law that says the official law of Texas is English.
Official language of Texas.
Yeah, the official language of Texas is English. There is no official language in the United States. People think, what? How is that? Well,
yeah, I think there should be.
Maybe there should be.
And we have a majority of conservative Republicans in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, and the bill never comes up to change it to English.
I have a thing that I'm going to throw out there, though, that is maybe a little bit controversial at the moment. One of the massive strengths of our culture, the one that does speak English here, is the fact that we don't have an official language. It's the fact that we have been so inclusive for so many years. But if you want to be effective in business, you're probably going to need to learn English. We're the melting pot, and we've taken the strengths and the cast-off strengths of many other cultures and combined it into something that doesn't look like the culture of the founding fathers. It doesn't look like the culture of the 1800s. It doesn't look like the culture of the mid-20th century.
It doesn't actually look very much like the 1900s either. Yeah.
The French, the Germans, and the Canadians work really hard by legally mandating that their culture gets preserved, that different parts of the culture get preserved. If you're in Quebec, any advertisement must have French advertisement on it as well. As soon as you start codifying and saying this must include this, you start killing business. Because what do we really want in the United States? We do want our culture. What parts of our culture do we want? Well, we don't. We codified in our government that we don't necessarily want it to be our religion. That should be separated out. Religion as a whole should be separated from government. That's something that goes all the way back to the beginning here. So what is it that we do want to keep in our culture? And there are some amazing books on this subject. One that won a lot of prizes, was also readable, is Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Yes, good book. Good
and
book.
It talks about the clashing of cultures. And how the stronger culture doesn't need a regulation around it to make it more successful. The other cultures fall into line because it works better. As soon as you start making laws to protect the culture, you start removing the ability of that culture to adapt and change and be stronger. So I agree. We have some things in our culture that we need to keep. One piece of that is that we're a nation of laws, not men. We've got a lot of culture here that isn't codified, that we do need to protect, and that is one of the dangers of illegal immigration. And when we set up an immigration system that works, we say, which part of our culture, which part of our citizenship do we value the most? And that's what we focus on. What we have right now is a broken system that's not really focused on preserving anything. And
okay, you said something a while ago, the melting pot. We don't have a melting pot.
Oh, yeah, we do.
We do not. Cherish diversity. And diversity goes against the melting pot. Diversity goes against what this country was made from. Diversity goes from many one.
Well, there's no diversity law.
No, when the chief of staff of the Army says the thing that makes our Rio de Janeiro, by the way, when he says the thing that makes our culture great is diversity, that's just idiotic. That's absolutely absurd. We have to pull as one culture. You know, they've got to be Americans. Well,
you can have both.
Hey, wait a minute. Now, when he said diversity, did you actually take a look at what that meant? What he was referring to?
I know what it means.
Well, what he was referring to was the fact that the United States Army at one time was segregated. It's not segregated anymore. And including black people in Army and in leadership in the Army has improved the quality of what they do. And that's what he was referring to. That was specifically what he was referring to.
I do not think so. I think it's a buzzword now. He wasn't thinking. He was a pretty good 4th Infantry Division commander. He did a good job in Iraq. But once he became chief of staff of the Army, you know, he got brainwashed with the Washington bunch, you know, and it's diversity is not good. You know, everyone should be part of the melting pot. I mean, there are people who were raised here who hardly speak English.
Right. Well, let me address that a second, because I don't think what you're saying and what we're saying is actually that different. If we look at every single immigration wave that's ever happened in the United States, go back to any one of them, Irish, Polish, Czech, Chinese, Italian, it doesn't matter. You're going to have clumps of culture that didn't melt. That's why we have Little Italy and Chinatown all over the United States. We've got clumps of these cultures that, you're right, it isn't melted. It didn't fuse with the rest of us. But by the second generation, that's not true. And this is stuff that's been studied for a long, long time.
By the third generation, it's certainly not true.
Right. And when you look at what is our culture, well, we have a massive amount of Scottish culture here. Well, that wasn't part of the Founding Fathers. I mean, there were just a few Scots in there. In fact, the Scottish culture is basically the entrepreneurial culture that we have today. That side of it comes from Scotland more than anything else. That wasn't part of the original culture. And when you think about, you know, musicals like West Side Story were developed because it was a microcosm of all of the Eastern European communities and Central European communities that were forming their own anti-U.S. culture that later became part of U.S. culture. And this is a debate that's been going on for a very, very long time. It's not just a debate that took place in the United States. Any country that purports to be a group of independent states, and states when we're talking about the colonies, those were nation states. The 13 colonies were independent of each other. We are the United States, so we have to have some form of communication, because it's diversity by itself. If you go back to the late 1700s, I mean, you can go back to just one city. Is it New Amsterdam or New York? Which culture of New York is the American culture of New York? It's the Dutch, it's the English, it's the German. And that's what I mean by melting pot. It isn't that it melts immediately on contact. It's that our culture tends to grab the strongest part of every new culture that comes in and hang on to it. And we discard the weak parts. And if some of the weak parts that we're discarding are the culture that was here originally, that's what makes us stronger. Now, we just have to determine which parts of our culture do we want to keep. Define that for yourself.
Do we want to be like Guatemala? Do we want to be like El Salvador?
No, and we don't want to be like the Scots-Irish either.
No, and we don't want to be like the English or the German or the Dutch. We want to be the United States.
They didn't have the Constitution. The Constitution is what – the Constitution of the Christian religion is what made this country. And it's still what makes it different. It's still what – you know, regardless of what Obama said, it's still what makes it exceptional. And, you know, you said people after the second –
wait a minute. The Constitution very specifically forbids a state religion. So how do you reconcile those two?
I'm saying the people who wrote the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were Christians.
Many of them weren't. Many of them weren't by their own writing at the time.
Predominantly.
No.
God is referred to many times.
Uh-huh. But Christ is never referred to in the it was specifically left out of the Constitution because there was a majority of people there who weren't Christians.
Not in the Declaration of Independence.
No, the Declaration of Independence refers to God but not to Christ.
Okay.
And refers to God as their creator, which is about as neutral as you can get.
You know, I work in a different culture. I mean, now, basically, than you do. A different, you know, you don't have too many immigrants coming in to see you with over $100,000 probably to invest. I don't know. I hope you do. But I work there, and I see fourth-generation Americans refusing health care because they've got to pay a copay or a deductible, and they say, why should I pay? I just go speak Spanish and go to the emergency room. Is that?
You got a problem there, and I agree.
Yeah, they don't have to speak Spanish in the emergency room. This is an American culture here. You just show up in the emergency room, and you're going to get taken care of.
Predominantly is what I'm talking about.
Yes, and I don't question for a second that there are people that you're describing that are there. And I can also tell you that in the fourth generation of Scots-Irish that migrated up into the Appalachian Mountains, there were still people who spoke Gaelic and didn't speak English.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time sometimes for that to actually occur. And I think what we're talking about here on the radio between you and us is a good debate to be had. And you can't just there's a boundary. Matter of fact, I said a few minutes ago, I personally think that we should allow people to come into the United States to fill a job and give them 10 years to learn English. And I think to apply for citizenship, you should have to speak English. Now, and I'm taking a little bit of this from Denmark, by the way. But the issue is if you want to be an American citizen, learn English, work for 10 years. Keep your nose clean, pay your taxes, do your job right, and then you're on a fast track to be a citizen. And
let me,
by the way, the Republicans object to that. The conservatives object to that position.
This is one more piece. It's a piece of information. It's not really an argument. I highly recommend that you go to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office online, uspto.gov, where you can look up patents. And what I would like you to do, and this is totally un-PC because there's nothing on there about citizenship. There's nothing about there about birth country. But do a search on the most recent patents, and what you'll find is that about 80% of them, U.S. patents made by U.S. citizens, are immigrant citizens. And this isn't something new. If you go all the way back to every major setup, every major setup to global expansion of the United States. What do I mean by that? When our technology sweeps across the globe as the next great thing, who invented it? Steve Jobs was born in Syria. This is Watt, Graham, Bell. I can go on. The strength of diversity is picking and choosing. The people that come to our country, we need to have some control of who they are, and they need to choose our culture. So this is what I mean when I say to you, I think we agree on this.
But why are they flying the Guatemalan flag?
That, well, that's the point. We have a broken system is why.
Well, because that is a few people who put up a flag.
Yeah, and
that is not the majority of people.
And if you go to Little Italy, you're going to see Italian flags today, even though nobody there speaks Italian as their language of choice anymore. If you go to the to Salado, Texas, during the gathering of the clans, you're going to see a lot of Scottish flags there. The recognition of the culture that
flown upside down.
Yeah, that was that. There's a distress call, and they believe in it, and that's one of the strengths of the United States is we give people the right to do that.
Yeah, and you know the people in Scotland are rather upset with us because they say you weren't from Scotland. Why are you saying you're Scottish? Well, that's where we came from, and we're taking the parts of the culture that we enjoy. And I like spaghetti too, so I'm happy with the Italian culture.
Scottish spaghetti.
I like haggis.
Let's talk about the tariffs now.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I'm a pretty dedicated listener to you guys, and I appreciate it. I enjoy it. When I can, much of the time I'm working on Saturday, you know, because I'm kind of a laborer. But, you know, you said the tariffs were going to be bad, and it hasn't played out yet. But, I mean, all three indices are, you know, at record highs.
Well,
The indexes aren't measuring trade, though. If we look at trade, the gap in trade has gotten much wider. We're at record levels, and this is one of the issues that is supposed to be solved, is that we're supposed to be narrowing the trade gap. We're supposed to have a surplus.
Why is that? I don't understand that. Why is that?
Well, there's several reasons for it. Primarily, it's because the United States got goosed by the tax cuts.
So we wanted to buy more, and the cheapest stuff to buy was still imported.
I don't know if you get our newsletter, but I mentioned this in some detail. We mentioned it in some detail in the newsletter. There's this big missing bunch of money in the United States because we're spending less on retail activities in the United States. We're spending less on services in the United States. We're spending less on manufacturing in the United States, and yet we're spending more money. The consumer is spending more money. And what is the difference? Well, the consumer is buying imports because we got a little goose in the economy through the tax cut. People have more money in their pockets. The wages are starting to go up. We're incapable of creating the goods and services in the United States. We just simply don't have enough people to do it. So people are buying things from, they go to Walmart and they buy something that's made in China. And they go online and they buy something that's made in China because there's actually a surge going on. The second side of that surge is the threatened 25% tariff on everything is causing people to hoard.
Yeah, they're buying things now because it's going to be too expensive later, which is causing us to buy more from China, but the threat that we won't be able to.
And these are all things that economists are very familiar with, but it's one of the things when we said this is a grand experiment. Basically, the president has made a choice. He and his advisors have said the economists are all wrong. The history of economics, as they publish it, is wrong.
Or,
we're going to try something different, completely opposition to it, and see if it works.
Or they could be doing something completely different than what is stated. They could be saying this is simply the tool to get people to the table to make a deal.
Sure.
And they've said some of both of those things. They've said, number one, we're going to do this. This will narrow the gap. And number two, we're going to do this and bring them to the table. And we've had some good deals get made. I mean, at least good enough deals get made.
It's just an experiment, and we're watching the experiment play out. And we'll see how it works out. Right now, I think you're going to see the second quarter GDP come in the 1-point-something% range. And the reason is not because of the tax cuts, is not because the economy doesn't have room to grow. It's because of tariffs. And that's just life.
Yeah, and we're about out of time for this hour, this week. Thank you all for listening, assuming that you are. If you're not, then you can't hear me. Ha, ha, ha. Did you like that? It's very schoolyard.
I'm going to have to think about that for a while.
We appreciate the listeners, and if you have some things that you would like us to talk about on the air, we do get some good stuff out of our email, so email us, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. We had emails over the last couple of days on a couple of different subjects, and then when we got started, people called in on the same subject, so you can be redundant, too. We like that. And I think people get this about us.
if you call in, even if we disagree, we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're supposed to be doing here.
There's a couple of news items that I wanted to get out, and we still got a couple of minutes left.
Right, right.
One of them is McDonald's has got robotic fries being made. And
Wait. The fries are robotic, or they're making them robotically?
They're making them robotically.
This might be a little extra crunchy.
We've been saying that with the, when the minimum wage goes up,
yep,
McDonald's will go to full automation.
Yep, and they're doing
it. In Chicago, they're trying it out right now. The second thing is, you may not know this about Amazon.
The hamburger machine is already automated to some extent.
Amazon is giving additional training all the way up to the master's degree level to 100,000 of their employees because they recognize that they're automating. And as they automate, there's a shortage of highly skilled people to run the automation. The ones who want to stay in Amazon after they get this high level of education and continue to run the automation will be able to do so. But even if the jobs get eliminated, they'll be able to move on to high-paying positions. And I just want to commend Amazon for that.
And we are about out of time. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail during the weekend, real live people during the week, locally at
254-947-1111.
You can reach that same voicemail during the weekend, real live people during the week at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can read our philosophy. Our newsletters are up there. Recordings of the
Don't forget
radio
our made
program.
For radio faces.
Yes, and if you'll wait, Khan will be on for the next couple of hours to discuss all things and always solve all the problems of the world.
He is certainly not unconny.
Until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach. Thanks for listening.
This is a Fox News alert. Hurricane Barry brings heavy rain and wind to the Gulf Coast. I'm Pam Puso. Barry is still offshore, but areas of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama are already flooding.
We're expecting a heavy rain event that will start today through the afternoon, tonight, and into tomorrow.
New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell, the winds picking up in Morgan City, Louisiana. That's where Fox's Rob Schmidt is.
Very slow-moving storm. This is barely moving. You could walk.